Tonight we want to conclude our discussion together of fellowship in matters of judgment. And as we discussed this morning, we are looking at things that are matters of judgment and things that are doctrinal. And what we are striving for is to have unity and it not be disrupted by making a matter of judgment a doctrinal thing, or making a doctrinal thing a matter of judgment. And I was talking this morning to Jim, my fellow son-in-law, and he was telling me that the church that he belonged to when he was younger, that they had three spirits in it while he was a member there, and all of those spirits were over things that were matters of judgment, things that were not doctrinal issues. And it's bringing that church to the point that today is just a handful of people and it's almost dead. Now, I could tell that same story where I grew up, that we have the kind of the same problem, that we have splits one after another over things that were not matters of doctrine. And so, in this lesson, we want to be able to understand how we can prevent such things from happening. And by the way, those type of things give us a very bad name. I mean, it hurts us as a group, because it seems that we can't even get along with one another. And one of the gospel preachers, whom I know I've known for many years, he used the phrase one time when I was very young in preaching, and said that we were the only people that shot its wounded. Really didn't understand what he meant when he said it, but now I'm older and a little bit more mature, I understand what he meant. And I think sometimes we can do that because we don't make the proper application between matters of judgment and things of doctrine. We'll begin tonight by talking about understanding the problem. During the reign of Claudius in 51 to 41 A.D., the emperor ordered all the Jews to leave Rome. We can read this in the book of Acts, in Acts 18, verse 2. After the death of Claudius in A.D. 54, the edict became void, and the Jews returned to Rome. But there was tension in the Roman church between those who were called strong and those who were called weak. And these terms are used in Romans chapter 14 and Romans chapter 15. And they are used in 1 Corinthians chapter 8 and 9 and 10. And so we need to understand what it means to be weak and what it means to be strong. Now, the strong are those that in the liberty of Christ through the laws are no longer bonded. They were no longer living under the restrictions of the Old Testament. They understood that, and they were considered strong. They also understood that one day was no more important than another, because they were no longer under the law to keep the festive days, to keep the feast days, or to even remember the Sabbath. And so these were considered strong because they had a proper understanding that those things went out when the law was nailed to the cross, Colossians 2:14. But the weak were in the law of the Lord, it was wrong to eat certain meats. They believed that it was still sinful, and it violated their conscience. And we'll talk about that in just a moment, because it could be, from a personal viewpoint, that it could become sin, even though it's not sin in and of itself. If you do something without faith, Romans 14:23, we will see it says that that's sin. And that certain days should be observed by others. And so they believed that some of the feast days and some of the special days under the old law, that they should still be kept. Now, the difference between these two groups, one had strong faith and one had weak faith. Well, what does it mean when one had strong faith and one had weak faith? I think the easier way to say this for us to understand, one had mature faith and one did not. One had a better understanding of the law of Christ, and the other one was still not up to par with what the law of Christ said and how the old law was put aside and nailed to the cross. And so you have the weak brother. How does the strong and the weak brother work together and not disrupt unity? Well, that's the key of Romans 14 and Romans 15. In Romans chapter 14, verse 1, the Bible says, "Receive one who is weak in the faith, not to dispute over doubtful things." Now, one who is weak in the faith. Weak is in understanding, not in his commitment. He is weak in his understanding of the faith. He is not fully understanding the standard and how it applies. It doesn't mean that he's weak in his commitment to the Lord. He's weak in his spiritual maturity. Uninformed, unable to practice, poor understanding, doing it not to the Lord, convinced in his own mind that he gives God to thanks. Okay, that's what he does. He believes that he has to continue to do that in order to be right with God. And it violates his conscience. But what that brother is, he's weak in the faith. He's weak in his proper understanding of the truth. Now, what's the danger of that? Well, the danger of that is that he judges his brother, who is strong in the faith, and he judges him to be wrong because of what he does. He also believes that to be sin, so he thinks it's sin for that brother to do. The other danger is, if he goes along with it, even though he's not fully convinced, then he violates his conscience, that becomes a sin. And so there's two dangers here. There's a danger of labeling the other person who is strong and violating God's will, and there's a danger of you violating your conscience if you go ahead and do something because somebody compels you to do it, but in your mind you're not fully convinced that that action is right. Therefore, you become guilty of sin. And so there's a danger for the strong and for the weak brother. Now, mature understanding, that's one who is informed. He's able to practice it. He has the proper understanding. He's going into the Lord. He's convinced in his own mind. He gives thanks. He's strong. He has a spiritual maturity about him. He can do that and then violate his conscience, and he knows that it's not sinful. But the danger is that he sets his brother in wrong. He's lifted up with pride. 1 Corinthians 8 warns about that. Do not use your liberty to fill yourself with pride. You can't think that you're better or you're more mature, so that makes you a better Christian, or that makes you have better understanding, but that makes you in a better situation with God. You got to be careful of that. That's being filled with pride. Now, there's another thing, and 1 Corinthians 8 really covers this much more than Romans 14 does, and that is you cause the weak to stumble. Now, what do we mean by you cause the weak to stumble? If somebody does not have the spiritual maturity to know the right and wrong of a given situation, and you know that there's nothing wrong or there's nothing violated by doing that action, but you know that your brother is still struggling with that, what should you do? How should you look at the liberty that you have? Should you take it? Or should you refrain from it to not cause your brother to stumble? We're going to see that Romans 14 tells us that we should refrain from that liberty, even though we have it, in order that we can teach our brother, bring him up to speed in what? His understanding of the truth, and not cause him to violate his conscience. That denotes love. That's showing love for your brother. Now, disputes. Disputes over doubtful things. Distinguishing and discerning and judging. The strong are not to judge the weak brother as being unworthy of fellowship because of his lack of understanding, regarding the matters that were indifferent to God. This weak brother should still be accepted into the fellowship. He should not be ostracized. He should not be isolated. He should not be shunned because his understanding is not the same understanding that I have. Now we're talking about matters of indifference. Now remember, now we're talking about matters of indifference. Matters of personal liberty. Let me give you a couple of illustrations. A Jew who had converted to Christianity, that had been a Jew his whole life. And for his whole life, he followed the Jewish law. And so there were certain foods that he could not eat. Now Romans 14 is going to make this as an example. So he believed that there were certain meats that he could not eat because that would violate what he has done his whole life. Now, could he be a Christian and still keep that dietary restriction? Yes, he could. But what he cannot do, what he must not do, is he must not bind that on his brother that understands that that law is no longer binding. And so he can, the brother who's strong, he can let the weaker brother be true to his conscience, but the strong brother should not downcast the weaker brother, and the weak brother should not downcast the strong brother. You both have to accept one another, and in time, that weak brother may come to understand that that is not a wrong action, and he may change what he does. But let's say he studies and he doesn't change what he does. Can he still be faithful and not eat pork, not eat bacon, not eat ham? Could he still not eat catfish? Could he still be a Christian? And could he still be in the fellowship? Even though in his mind he can't do that. Yes, he can do that because that's a matter of indifference. And so we should let him have that liberty. Now, one mistake's concept of what includes the faith does not change a matter of indifference into the faith. The problem is, people make these matters of indifference, they make it the faith. They make it a doctrinal thing. And now we've got a problem. Now we're binding where God does not bind. Now we have made a law where God has not made a law. And now we're causing a disruption in unity. Now we're causing a disruption, and it's going to lead to strife. We must come to the absolute certainty in our mind that a thing is a matter of faith. And this certainty must be the result of an objective and diligent study of God's Word. God has not left the faith in doubt. In Ephesians chapter 3, in verse 4, the Apostle Paul wrote to the church at Ephesus. He said, by which when you read, you may understand my knowledge in the mystery of Christ. In 2 Timothy 3, all scripture is given by inspiration of God. It is to reprove, it is to correct, it is to rebuke. It is to exhort with all long-suffering and doctrine. And it goes on to say that it equips man to every good work. In 2 Peter chapter 1 and verse 5, you remember Peter in his second letter began this letter in talking about the things that we need to add to our faith. But we have to make absolutely certain that a matter is doctrinal before we treat it as doctrinal. We've got to make sure, according to God's Word, that that is a doctrinal issue. And it is not a personal liberty. And that is not as hard as it sounds. We can do that by properly studying and applying the Scriptures. Now, let's talk about conviction and conscience for a minute. Love should govern our knowledge. You read in 1 Corinthians, go over to 1 Corinthians 8 for a moment. Love should be the thing that governs our understanding. In 1 Corinthians chapter 8, in verse 1 through 3. Now concerning things offered to idols, we know that we all have knowledge. Knowledge puffs up, but love edifies. If anyone thinks that he knows anything, he knows nothing, yet as he ought to know. But if anyone loves God, this one is known by him. Love should govern how we handle these matters of indifference. The weak are those who do not have an accurate knowledge regarding the liberties. In 1 Corinthians 8, the Gentiles who were converted to Christianity came out of pagan religion. What did they do in pagan religion? Well, they would take animals and they would bring them to the altar of their god, to the idol, and they would set that food before the idol in order to feed that idol and to show reverence to that idol. And then, after that had been done, after that ceremony had been done, they could take that meat and they could take it to the open market and they could sell it. Well, a Gentile who came out of that religion, if you invited him to your house and you set that meat before him and told him you had bought it in the marketplace after it was offered to an idol, that could be a problem for your Gentile brother. Because he came out of that and he believed that meat was defiled because it was offered to an idol that is a false god. Now again, you know that there's no false gods. You know those gods are false, and you know that offering something to an idol doesn't actually mean anything. And that meat is no different than any other meat because an idol is nothing. But your brother doesn't understand that. He hasn't got there yet. He hasn't come to understand that yet. And so what should you do? You have the right to eat that because you know there is nothing in an idol. But your brother may have a problem. What do you do? You forego your liberty for the sake of your brother. That's what love does. That's how love acts. That's how unity is not destroyed. That's how there's no strife or contention. The weak are those whose conscience has not comprehended their liberty yet. They have not put that together in their mind yet. The strong are not to use their liberties to destroy the weak. In 1 Corinthians 8, 9 through 13, he makes this argument. We cannot take our liberty to destroy the weak brother. If we do, we do not have love for our brother, and we become guilty of sin. Even though the action is not sinful, the way we have used it in our conduct, that makes sin in our lives. And so we've got to... Remember we talked about this morning, you've got to be a servant. If you're a servant, you're going to put other people's needs ahead of your own. Is it going to matter if you don't eat that meat? Is it going to matter if you don't serve it or if you serve something different in order to serve your brother and so his conscience won't be violated? Wouldn't that be a better way to go than to force your liberty upon your brother who is weak in the faith? You can't do that. If you do that, you're going to disrupt unity. And so we've got to have a conviction, and we've got to have the proper conscience. You've got to have a conviction that a thing is right, but you also cannot violate your conscience in your action. Because if you do, even though your action may not be wrong, if you violate your conscience, that becomes sinful. That becomes a sin. So if you, let me explain it this way. If you think something is wrong, you better not do it. If you've got doubt in your mind of certain action in your life that you might participate in, you have doubts whether that thing is right or not, you better stay away from it. You better not do it because you can go ahead and do it, and even though that action may not be sinful, you violate your conscience because you have not yet been convicted of that. And so again, that's something between you and God. I wouldn't know that, but God knows that. God knows whether we violate our conscience and we're truly not convicted. Instruction for the weak. The weak are not to condemn another based on your lack of understanding. Do not bind where God is not bound. In Romans chapter 14, in verse 3 and 4, you know, one of the things that people need to do when they study this issue, they need to look at the context. In verse 3 it says, let him who weeps despise him, let not him who weeps despise him who does not eat. And let not him who does not judge him who weeps, for God has received him. Now listen to this. God has received both persons, the one that eats and the one that not eats. Even though they're different actions, God received them both. That's another big difference. Can that be done in a doctrinal thing? Will God receive them both? No, God won't receive them both. If you have a doctrinal issue, and one is doing one thing and one is doing another, God is not going to receive both of them, because that's a doctrinal issue. But if God is receiving both of them, then that is a matter of indifference. Who are you to judge another servant? To his own master he stands or falls. Indeed, he will be made to stand, for God is able to make him stand. Here's the key. One person esteems one day above another. Another esteems every day alike. Let each one be fully convinced in his own mind. Okay? Now, you could take this thing two ways, and you get yourself in trouble one way. Let me give you an illustration. When I was younger, there was a fellow in the Lord's church, a member of the church where I grew up at. He thought it was sinful to do any labor on Sunday. I mean, to do anything. I had a bit of sin when I did this afternoon. I cut my grass because the crabgrass was overrunning my yard. And tomorrow it's supposed to be 95. 10 degrees is 10 degrees to me. I didn't want to cut it, but I did because it was convenient. Now, if you believe that you can't do that, you better not get out there. Because even if you cut it and it's not sinful, if you believe it's sinful, it becomes a sin. Now, if I have a brother, now, does that mean that I'm really kind of locked in a box, if somebody has a problem with my action that I can't do it because it bothers his conscience? No, because I'm not doing it in front of him. But now, if that brother came over to my house and I knew that he had that conscience, I wouldn't be on that mall. I wouldn't be out there. Because I know that his conscience is different than mine. I don't believe I'm wrong to be out there, but I'd be wrong if it bothers him. If it bothers him, I'm going to love him enough that I'll refrain from doing it. I might do it some other time. But you know what? The other things, I can't do that. And you know what? I've been sitting with the history, and it doesn't bother me. Okay. So it doesn't bother you. You're fully convinced in your mind. It doesn't matter what you're convinced in your mind. Because God has legislated how we are to use music in worship. That's a doctrinal thing. And even though you don't violate your conscience, and hey, I've had brethren who use the instrument, use this on me, well, it didn't violate my conscience. They'll quote that verse. They'll quote 1 Corinthians 14:5. It says, if each one be convicted in my mind, I'm convicted. Just because you're not, don't condemn me. You're talking about apples and oranges. We're not talking about a matter of indifference. When you're talking about the history, you're talking about the doctrinal issue. You're talking about something God has legislated on. And it doesn't matter if it doesn't violate your conscience. Your conscience needs to be changed because you're violating the law. You're violating something that's in the law. You see, you can take these passages and you can make anything right. Because you can say, well, I'm convinced in my own mind. It doesn't change what the law says. Be fully convinced. To practice it or not, that's your choice. But whether you do or don't do it, make sure for the purpose of serving the Lord that your action is right. He who observes the day, observes it to the Lord. He who does not observe the day to the Lord does not observe it. For he gives God thanks. And he who does not eat to the Lord, he does not eat, and he gives God thanks. You see, both of these people, they praise God and they give God thanks, even though both of them do different actions. One refrains to eat, another one eats. But you see, God accepts both because that's a matter of indifference. Now, some time ago, there was a brother who caused quite a stir because he said there were no issues today that fall in the category of Romans 14. Oh, yes, there is. Oh, yes, there is. Now, I could give you a list of them, but I'll just give you a couple. I'll just give you a couple, for instance. The covering. If you go down south in Alabama, and you go down to some of those churches down there, not only were the covering, they will have coverings in the pew to give to you for you to wear if you come and you're visiting and you don't have one. Now, in the years gone by, there were brothers who made that a doctrinal issue. And they would break fellowship over that. That has waned in the last 10, 15 years. But here's my problem with making that a doctrinal issue. If that's the doctrine, and I believe that's a doctrinal issue, what passage would I use to justify that that's a doctrinal issue? You know what passage I'd use? 1 Corinthians chapter 11. Okay, if I don't practice it, and I believe I have not violated the law, and I have a true passage too, what passage would I use? 1 Corinthians 11. Okay, we're both using the same passage, but we're doing a different action. Doesn't that tell you something? We're both doing an action, and we're both using the same passage. Neither are both wrong, but we both can't be right. If somebody's wrong, somebody's right about that. I don't have a problem. I have friends whose wives wear the covering. I don't have a problem. We get along fine. I preach meetings in places where they are, where they worship. Where neither of them wear it. We don't have a problem. But there were brothers who were making that a problem. That's when you have violated what this passage is trying to tell you not to do. That's a Romans 14 issue. That's a matter of indifference. All will stand before the Lord to be judged. If God accepts him, then both are going to be judged favorably. If God doesn't have a problem with it, how in the world can I have a problem with it? If the Lord accepts him, he's the one that does, and he accepts both, how in the world can I condemn that? How in the world can I condemn that brother that God receives? I'd be out of my place, wouldn't I? I'd be out of my place to determine that I can't receive them. God receives them, but I won't. You see, we're violating the principle. Nothing is unclean in and of itself. But it's unclean to him who thinks it's unclean. If he thinks that thing's unclean, you've got to leave it alone. You can't come near that stuff. If you think a certain meat is unclean, and you think that's a violation of your conscience, you've got to stay away from that. But don't bind that on me. Because then you're going to disrupt unity. You're going to cause strife. You're going to cause contention. And that's what we're not to do. Pursue peace. How do we pursue peace? We let each one be fully convicted in their mind. We let each one's conscience be their God. If they can do it, fine. If this one can't do it, that's fine. God receives them, leave them alone. Now again, if you want to stay, if he wants to stay with you, I want to know, and this happened to me, my sister-in-law, my young brother's wife, for a period of time, she grew up and she wore the covering. Never mentioned it. We'd go to worship where they worship at in Indiana. We'd go and we didn't have a problem. She'd come and visit where I preach. We didn't have a problem. I never mentioned it. That was okay. I respected her. I respected her conscience. One day she came to me. She says, Keith, can I ask you something? I said, sure. Could you explain to me why you think the covering is not necessary? I said, Peggy, I'll explain it to you, but I want you to know going in that I don't have one problem with you now. I don't want to make this an issue because it's not an issue. But I will show you why I believe that it is not a doctrinal issue. And I went through What I did is I did a verse-by-verse study of the first 16 verses of 1 Corinthians 11. And I went through it and I showed you why I thought that this was not what was under consideration in this text. It was not talking about the covenant, it was talking about a matter of authority that was in the first century. It was a custom in the first century to demonstrate authority that men had over a woman. That was a culture thing. But in verse 16 it says, we have no such custom in the Lord's church. That tells me it's not a doctrinal thing. And I left it at that. And I didn't say any more about it. 6 months later, she quit learning. She decided. I didn't force the issue. I didn't go to, hey, you know, that covenant ring. We need to get into that thing. You see, some brethren do that. Or brethren who would, will condemn those who don't work. And they'll make an issue out of it. And then they bring division. They bring strife. And they disrupt unity. That's what God says you can't do. And so you've got to be able to distinguish between what's a matter of indifference and what's a matter of doctrine. And you've got to leave the weak brother or the weak sister alone until she matures and her understanding. And you know what? In that one area, if she never matures, it's not going to change her relationship with God. It's not going to change her spiritual standing with God. It better not change yours. If God receives her, then you better receive her. Because that's what God has required of us. Not to violate his conscience. Look at Romans 14:23. It's a simple passage. But he who doubts is condemned if he eats, because he does not eat from faith. Whatever is not of faith, it is sin. Any action that you do, and you're not fully convicted that action is right, if you do that action, that becomes a sin for you, because you have violated your own conscience. Now again, it may not be sinful, but if you believe it's sinful and you do it, then it does become a sin, because you violate your conscience. Now, what about the other side of this coin? What about the strong? Do not judge or condemn the brother because of his lack of understanding. You don't go up to him and say, are you crazy? Are you nuts? There's nothing. We're not to do. We can have ham and bacon and catfish. You can eat all that. But we don't live under the old law. Why don't you grow up? No, that's not what you do. That's the wrong approach. That's not showing love. That's not edifying your brother. That's not considering your brother. Do not judge him because he is weaker in his understanding than you are. Do not despise him. Do not isolate him. Do not make him feel that he is wrong because he doesn't agree with you. What you do is you make sure you are convinced that he's right, and you do it to the Lord. You will give an account to God, and you'll give an account to God. But don't let this indifference, a matter of personal judgment and liberty, do not let it become a wedge that divides you and your brother and causes disunity in the Lord's church. And brethren, we have violated this principle over and over and over in the years that I've been a member of the Lord's church. We have not learned not to do that. We have poached our, and I got a different word than I use, a matter of indifference, a hobby. We get a hobby horse, and we ride that horse to death. And we make that thing the most important thing. I'll give you an example. Circumcision in the first century. The Jews were absolutely adamant to make the Gentiles be circumcised. They wrote that thing and they caused such problems with that they brought disruption in the Lord's church, because they tried to bind circumcision on the Gentiles when God did not bind it on them. Now, if the Gentile wanted to be circumcised, that's his business. But it wasn't a doctrinal requirement. But the Jews were making it one by their standard and by their law. and that was causing a problem between brother and sister, and it was causing problems in the Lord's church. That is not the way that it's to be done. We have to remember that we want to save our brother as much as hopefully he wants to save me. Not to put a stumbling block in your brother's way. Now you know what, if I know you have a conscience about eating certain meat, I'm not going to invite you over for a ham dinner. Even though I like ham, and I love bacon, and if you don't like bacon, there's something wrong about that. But you know what, if you have that conscience, I'm not going to violate it. I'm not going to force my conviction on you. Because why? I don't want to disrupt our unity. I don't want to disrupt our relationship. Why? Because I love you. You love me. I don't want to disrupt the church. I don't want to cause the problem of the church. And so we've got to learn to do that. Don't destroy your brother with your food. Paul said, I'll never eat food again if it destroys my brother. If that bothers my brother and that will destroy him, I refrain from eating that food. You know what that demonstrates? That demonstrates strength. It also demonstrates love for his brother. That's what we're required to do. Pursue peace. That's how you pursue peace. You teach your big brother the truth. You teach it to him. Give him time. Give him a little time. Bring him along. Study with him. Let him figure it out on his own. Don't try to force feed him. Don't try to cram it down his throat to see it like you see. Because when we do that, what we're going to do, we're going to cause disruption in the Lord's church. Now, God receives the strong and the weak. That's what the text says. The Lord is sovereign to each. Each of them respect God. God respects them. Do not cause your brother to stumble. Do not destroy your brother. Do not use your feet under Christ to pressure the weak to violate his conscience. You got the liberty, but don't use it in a way to destroy your brother, because then you've destroyed yourself. We should receive one another. The Lord sustains each believer. Each believer is accepted by God. The Lord alone will judge each of us. Do not grieve your brother. Don't cause my brother to be grieved because I'm trying to burn my conscience on him. Don't do that. Do not forfeit your example. And do not denounce or flaunt your liberty. Because when you do that, you have not demonstrated love. Now, in closing, in following Jesus, our differences will not prevent us from being united in faith and patience. Biblical unity and diversity. There are different races. There's black, there's white, there's Asian, there's Hispanic. There's many different races. People have different cultures. They come from different upbringings. They have different family histories. They have different educational values. And you know what? None of these should cause or disrupt fellowship or unity. Because he's black and I'm white. Or they're Asian and I'm white. Or because they grew up in Alabama and I grew up in